Welcome to another Harvard Business School Working Knowledge podcast. I'm Jim Eisner. On May 1st, the world of journalism was rocked by the report that News Corporation, the international media conglomerate headed by Rupert Murdoch, had made an offer to buy Dow Jones for $5 billion. That comes out to $60 a share, a 65% premium over what the stock was selling for at the time. If the deal is successful, Murdoch will add the iconic Wall Street Journal to a portfolio that already includes such assets as the New York Post, the Times of London, B-Sky BTV, DirecTV, the Fox Network, TV Guide, and publisher HarperCollins. Reactions to the bid ran the gamut from fear and loathing, the end of the Wall Street Journal as we know it, to the belief that Dow Jones would be a much better run business with Rupert Murdoch in charge. My guest today will give us his thoughts on this very big deal. Bharat Anand is a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School, where he specializes in corporate strategy. His second year elective course has a unit on media and entertainment companies, including a case study he co-authored on News Corp. In November, he and a Harvard Business School colleague will teach a new executive education program called Effective Strategies for Media Companies, Navigating the New World. Bharat, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Jim.
Let's begin by setting the scene a bit. It's well known that, on the whole, newspapers are struggling to compete with the web for readers and advertisers. That said, the Wall Street Journal has a circulation of over 2 million and a website that attracts paying customers like me. These are jewels in the crown of parent company Dow Jones. Why is the company vulnerable to Rupert Murdoch's advances?
There's various reasons, Jim. The first is, as you pointed out, they have some fabulous assets, but that doesn't always translate into the bottom line. The Wall Street Journal, if we try and look at its profitability, is on the lower side. Of course, as we know it also, there's a broader trend going on here, which is newspapers in general are struggling with the threat of online. The Journal is in some sense buffered by that, at least temporarily, with its subscription revenues. But those are some of the reasons why not just Dow Jones, but possibly any newspaper company is vulnerable today.
We're talking about $5 billion, $60 a share. What justifies that kind of money for Dow Jones?
It could be ego. That's something we've heard a lot about.
And that's Rupert Murdoch's ego to grab
Murdoch's
this
ego.
Lifelong
that's,
dream.
That's right. But we've heard this before as well. So if one goes back in time, News Corporation has made various deals over the last 20, 25 years where it appeared that they were overpaying at those points in time as well. You know, one famous example is 14 or 15 years ago, they bid for the rights to the NFL when they were trying to launch the Fox broadcast network. They ended up paying about $180 million more than CBS was willing to offer. And a lot of analysts thought they'd be losing about $500 to $700 million on that four-year deal. That was another case where ego or overpayment might have been driving this. It turns out that, in fact, there was a lot of value from that deal to News Corp because there were various kinds of spillovers to other parts of the organization. And even if one looks at the Fox network more narrowly, the impact on the other programs they had during the week through cross-promotions, through the fact that viewers who watched the NFL would stick and watch the other shows on Sunday night, that was huge value. And so if one accounts for those spillover benefits, they might have, in fact, paid a fair price. So if you look at the history of News Corp, it's hard to rule out the possibility that it's profits rather than ego that drive this company.
And I like that sort of idea of the spillover effects. What spillover effects might there be in this deal as opposed to the CBS deal?
There are various possibilities, Jim. The first is the link to the other newspaper operations. So the internet's a common threat to newspapers in general, whether it's business or political news or other types of news. Clearly, any media company trying to confront this challenge needs at least three things: cash, brands, and people. The Dow Jones, through the Wall Street Journal, provides at least two of those, which is a fabulous brand and some very talented editors and journalists. So that's one possibility in terms of the links to the other parts of News Corp's
And Rupert portfolio. Brings the cash?
And Rupert brings the cash.
Okay.
You know, in fact, the more interesting aspect is that News Corp itself has been struggling with its newspaper operations during the last 5-10 years. 5 years ago, newspapers brought in about 25% of the company's profits. Today, it's down to 13%. And he himself has declared, as we know, that they've been probably far too complacent in dealing with the online challenge. So this could be part of a strategy to really kind of buffer up or create that online platform. The second is the link to the TV assets. You know, if you look at the last 20 years, News Corp has really been a TV movie company. Newspapers only account for 15% of revenues and profits. They've really been successful in launching various TV channels over the last 10 years, starting with the Fox Network 20 years ago, then Fox News, FX, Fox Sports. And this could be a nice asset or brand for them to be able to launch a business channel. The third is the link geographically. News Corp clearly has a presence in many parts of the world, and the distribution assets they bring to bear could allow them, in some sense, to leverage the Wall Street Journal or Dow Jones brands to increase their presence in different parts of the world, emerging markets and other ways.
And strengthen the Wall Street Journal brand in places like Asia and Europe.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. There's also some talk about the consolidation going on within the industry. Bigger is better and more efficient or whatever. A recent example is the merger of Thomson and Reuters in the financial information business. Does that play a role in this deal at all as well?
Partly. I mean, there are some connections. There are few trends at work in newspapers, more narrowly in business news and more broadly in the media industry. The first is that regardless of which part of the sector we're talking about, competition is increasing, not just from traditional sources, in other words, Reuters versus Bloomberg versus Dow Jones, but from online. And this, of course, is amplified by convergence between the TV or media industry more broadly, technology, and telecom, which is why we can now think about Google being a threat to all kinds of news sites. So that creates some pressures on traditional players to either increase the top line or cut costs. And that might be partly what's motivating these mergers. In fact, Reuters and Thomson have talked about slashing costs where there is duplication across their staffs. More generally, competition is creating a few central strategic challenges, I think. The first is that as you have more and more alternatives in the marketplace, that's creating a challenge for these companies in terms of how to get their products in front of consumers in a way that gets noticed. For that, you need brands. You need distribution. And again, coming back to the example of Dow Jones, Wall Street Journal, and in the other example, Reuters, do provide that. Second is, even if one does get traffic, there's a challenge about how to monetize it in the face of free advertising supported models.
So by monetize, you mean make money.
To make money. Business news is somewhat buffered from this because of the subscription models, but it's not clear how long that'll last.
Well, let's look at the Wall Street Journal itself. And, of course, the big question that everyone seems to be asking is, what will happen to the Wall Street Journal with Rupert Murdoch in charge? You know, will he interfere with news coverage when it affects his own business interests in this country or abroad? Are you willing to offer a prognosis on that?
So one possibility is that interference doesn't just compromise the editorial or journalistic quality, but drives away readers. If that were the case, I think that would be not just poor editorial judgment, but poor business judgment. The other possibility is that they try and increase readership, but in a way that some people feel might compromise quality. Now, that's an interesting tension. It's a harder tension to manage. It comes back to this question of whose interests are primary. Is it the readers or is it the product? And that has always been a tension in the media industry, not just in newspapers, but in other parts of the sector. Unfortunately, I think for big media firms, old media firms, the power is shifting possibly undeniably in favor of readers or viewers or listeners with the internet and with new distribution channels. So in other words, what we're seeing here is not really about Rupert and Dow Jones or even about the internet and newspapers, but quite possibly about big and old media versus new media. It's a larger, much broader tension.
Let's pull back a bit and look at the newspaper industry as a whole. It's in the midst of a revolution, it's a fight for survival. You've written a case study recently on a Norwegian newspaper company called Schibsted that has successfully adapted to the changing times with its online presence. What steps did they take, and can newspapers in other countries, including the United States, follow their lead?
Schibsted, like many other newspaper companies in the Western world, was facing a crisis in the mid and late 1990s. They looked at the print operations becoming possibly obsolete in 10, 20, 30 years. The difference between their strategy and almost any other newspaper company that we're aware of sort of really boils down to a few dimensions. First was a fairly contrarian investment strategy. In 2001 and 2002, around the time that the internet bubble burst and the market crashed, they actually continued making investments in their online ventures when most other companies were scaling back. And that's paying off today. That was really driven by two other factors. One, a deep belief amongst the management team that the changing consumer behavior was here to stay. This was not going to go back to the old days. And a board, frankly, that was tolerant of a fairly long-term view in terms of when these investments might pay off. And that was really kind of part of what drove their resource allocation decisions at that point. The other interesting aspect that we found was the organizational structures they had set up internally. In other words, they separated the online ventures from the print, but not entirely, because they also wanted to share certain assets from the print operations, like the brand. And so what they did was effectively give the print operations a stake in the online ventures. They could share in the cash flows, but not complete decision rights. In other words, they didn't have the right to kill off these new ventures, which most companies might instinctively do for fear of cannibalization. So the corporate center actually played an interesting role there. Lastly, there was internal competition that really they utilized across different parts of the business to try and kind of make each part better than the other. There's also the Norway factor. Norwegian consumers are fairly computer savvy. They read a lot of newspapers, and the media market is somewhat less fragmented than in the U.S. I think that has part to do with the explanation of their success, but not entirely. Today, 50% of their, or close to 50% of their profits come from online, and that number is likely to increase. If one just thinks about the three threats that traditional newspaper companies face, one is from classified advertising going online. The second is how to develop online news sites that compete with, let's say, TV news sites that can actually generate revenues and profits. And the third is how to compete with free newspapers that are arising in different markets. What's striking about this company is they were successful on all three dimensions.
The free newspaper is a phenomenon that has spread to a number of cities in the United States. A number of these papers are actually owned by a European concern. I was at a meeting recently where someone made the comment that in time all newspapers may be free. What's your take on that?
I think as readership continues to decline for the print part of the newspaper business, one could see a switch to the free model at some point for various reasons. You save on various costs. You save on the circulation department. There's the tabloid format and the print costs. You save on distribution costs.
Paper, in other words, with
absolutely.
The tabloid smaller.
Right. But there's also a question about whether advertising revenues, right, that's the source of revenue in the free model, can sustain the free sheet model. And the jury is still out. In certain markets, we're seeing successes in Europe and in a few in the U.S. You know, whether this is a sustainable model across all markets is still not known. Print, I think, can survive, but probably in a different format. It might need to be more local. There might need to be more analysis, perhaps need to be more consumer-oriented. So there are various possibilities, I think. Quality can probably always find a home, but there is no question that free sheets are gaining acceptance and readership.
To end our conversation, let's take a look at a little preview of your new executive education course. What do you hope to accomplish with that?
This is a three-day program that we're offering this November with a colleague in the strategy group, Felix Oberholzer, G. And our objective was really the following. We're seeing, as we've talked about today, various parts of the media sector confronting some fairly serious challenges posed by new media and by convergence. Our interest is in how existing players, large media firms, manage this transition, rather than, you know, what are the opportunities for startups. So in other words, it's really a program about corporate change and corporate transformation, trying to exploit the opportunities at the same time as you confront the threats. The format will be, you know, a very regular Harvard Business School format, where we'll offer case studies that study both common challenges that apply to different parts of the media sector, as well as some best-in-class cases, for example, Shipstead. And we're hoping to get together different professionals in the same room, which you don't normally see. In other words, legal professionals on the one hand, technology experts, and those in charge of strategy and decision-making. We're hoping that that might stimulate conversation and learnings in a way that might be useful to these companies.
I wish you well with that. I hope to sit in. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, Jim.